Hello, friends, and welcome back to season 7 of Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology. I am your host, Amy Sloan, and I am joined today with my special guest co-host, Emma Sloan.
Hello!
Emma is my 15-year-old daughter, and she has graciously helped me out with the past couple listener Q&A episodes that we have used to kick off the new seasons. So you should definitely go back and look for the other listener questions episodes. These are Ask Me Anything episodes, and we've had
They're
fun.
Pretty fabulous.
Yeah, we've gone deep sometimes.
We've talked about days of infamy.
Yeah, some family scandal. It's been very exciting. I don't know if we have any scandal to share today, but you will have to stick around and find out.
Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of 5, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us.
Before we get started with your questions, I wanted to let you know what you can expect in season 7 of the podcast. We are going to have our regular bi-weekly episodes on Mondays. Those will drop in your podcast apps. You can also always find the transcripts for the episodes, except for the Q&A episodes, over on the blog at humilityanddoxology.com. And again, not the Q&A episodes with my...
They're super exclusive.
Yeah, they're very exclusive. We don't do video for these, but other episodes typically have video, and you can find those over at the Humility and Doxology YouTube channel. I am super excited about the guests that I have coming on the show for season 7. I have recorded already almost all of the episodes. There's just one or two that got rescheduled due to illness. But you guys, it is going to be awesome. Next week, we have the one and only Andrew Pudua from IEW coming on.
I know. Whoa. I know. That's exciting.
That's very exciting.
You should definitely listen to it, guys.
Okay, Emma keeps me very humble for these, these Q&A
episodes. No, I'm serious. They're fabulous, and you all should listen to them.
Okay, some other great guests that are coming up this season are SD Smith, the author of the Green Ember series, Robbie Jane, the author of one of my favorite home education books, or I guess just education books in general, The Liberal Arts Tradition, Jamie Erickson. I recently read her book Holy Huga and loved it. Tiffany Jefferson, and so many more. We're going to cover topics like scripture memory work, writing and creativity, the freedom we have as homeschoolers, classical conversations, natural philosophy, memory work, and working at home while homeschooling. So pretty much anything you can imagine related to homeschooling, we're going to talk about. Please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you are listening right now. Just take a minute and hit those stars. I think 5 sound good.
5 does sound good since this is the coolest podcast in the whole entire world.
Stop it.
So 100 out of 5 stars for me.
Okay.
And everyone else too, because okay. It's great.
Great. Thanks, Emma. And while you're at it, if you would tell a friend, you can screenshot the podcast and share it on social media or send it in a message or just, you know, like we did back in the 90s, talk to a friend about something you're enjoying over coffee.
Well,
in real life.
That's old school, Mom.
It's very old school. It really is one of the best ways to help more people get the homeschool encouragement in their earbuds that comes in this podcast, and I really appreciate those of you who give me a little space in your earbuds. Okay, one more bit of housekeeping information before we get started. I am very excited because later this month, I'm hosting a free Winter Wonder Homeschooling Challenge because sometimes January and February are kind of blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
February is not the best month.
No, it's really easy for us to start feeling discouraged. Like, we don't want to keep persevering. Why are we doing this anyway? Does any of it really matter? It just gets a little dull and boring and cold and dreary and dark.
Lots of rain and clouds. yeah. and misery.
So, if your homeschool is feeling miserable.
Rain clouds clouding your house.
Yes. Okay. What you need is the sunshine of this Winter Wonder homeschooling challenge.
Lots of icy crystals that look really cool because we're homeschoolers and we like science like that, right?
Yeah, like prisms and rainbows and beautifulness. But
beautiful.
Okay, all seriousness. Be quiet now. All right. All seriousness, I have teamed up with over a dozen other amazing folks, and we have resources for every age, from preschool to teen. There are videos, there are printables, there are games. We're going to talk about art and science and music. There's morning time plans. There's a winter unit study. And I'm also including some of my own workshops for moms so that you will have something to learn alongside your kids as well, because moms are people too. And it is very easy to sign up. Like I said, it's all free. And you can go to humilityanddoxology.com/winterwonderchallenge to sign up for free, or just click the link in the show notes.
Okay, that was awesome. Are we ready to move on to what was happening this semester?
Yes, Emma, I wanted to start by talking a little bit about what worked well in our homeschool family last semester, and I'll start and then let you say what worked well for you.
Cool.
So one thing that was super exciting was seeing my youngest son kind of come into his own with reading. He's really struggled and been just had some challenges with that, and he still has challenges. He's still working through things. We're still reminding him on, okay, no, that's a B, not a D, or a U, not an N at different times. But this year we started using the All About Spelling Level 1 at the beginning of the fall, just really focusing on the phonograms and the rules. And I saw the fruit of this perseverance that he has shown this holiday season, because our family traveled to DC, which, side note, was really great and fun. And to see Isaac sounding out the words on the monuments or reading the signs at the museums when he's barely been able to sound out, you know, a word or two at the beginning of the school year was just such an encouragement.
Yeah.
That warmed my heart. I will mention, if you give All About Spelling a try, which
you totally should. It's great.
Yes. Emma has used it before as well. It's really helpful for struggling spellers. Or in Isaac's case, it's helping him actually even with his reading. Really don't recommend getting the magnet letter tiles. They are very small and
very annoying.
Use
the app.
Yeah, so we get the app. And so it's basically all of the letter tiles you would normally have as magnets, only it's on an app. And it's great. And we actually can use them.
Yeah.
So, side note about that. How about you?
And you don't have to store a big whiteboard of magnets, because that's really obnoxious.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, Emma, how about you? What is something that worked really well for you last semester?
Well, this isn't perhaps precisely school, but I joined the team of the fabulous podcast Kids Talk Church History, where a group of teenagers talk about church history and various fabulous folks from where currently in We're up to like the 5th century right now, I think. And so we talk a little bit about the person / topic in question. And then we interview an expert on the topic. And it is super fun. And, you know, church history is really cool. And I love it a lot. And I've really enjoyed this project thing.
Yeah, it's been really fun to get to hear you and the other teens talk about church history and share your enthusiasm for the subject. It's been fun for me to have you like become a podcaster like your mom. And I would definitely recommend people check out the Kids Talk Church History podcast and listen for Emma. She joined – I don't remember which episode it was that was your first episode.
I think my first episode was 7 maybe. It was in December.
Yeah, and then she's been participating –
when it was released anyway.
Yeah, she's been participating more and is currently writing an episode or two. So that's going to be fun to see how that all shakes out this spring. You also had your first dual enrollment class last fall. How did that go?
It was good. started off easy with a music appreciation class. So it was a good easing in. I'm going to be doing pre-calculus this semester, so we'll see how that goes. But I've been enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I've been proud of you for doing something hard and outside your comfort zone. Your older brother also did some dual enrollment classes last fall, and those went well. They were really challenging, and he persevered in those. I was really proud of him. And I guess I'll mention Grace and Sophia. Grace is always climbing trees. I have never seen a girl who can climb a tree. Or, yeah. Like, not even – I shouldn't even just say a girl. Like,
anyone.
Anyone.
She's fabulous.
She doesn't even need branches. She just goes up trees. It's amazing.
Like a monkey.
Yes. She's our little monkey, and I love it. And then Sophia got her first pair of pointe shoes this summer, and that has been a big part of her her semester.
She had her first pointe performance in December.
Yeah. So last semester was hard, but there were a lot of good things, too.
A lot of good firsts.
But I was also thinking about what needs to change this semester, and I wrote in my notes that Mom needs more humility and gentleness and needs to persevere by grace. And so Emma was like, yeah, so you need to be sanctified.
Sanctification is good for all seasons and all semesters. Just continue being sanctified.
Yeah, so that's my big goal for this semester. Okay, we are going to now move into the Q&A section, but first we're going to take a break and hear from our podcast sponsor.
One of the most exciting things for me as a homeschool parent is seeing my children curled up in the corner with a beloved book. And few things have been as challenging as seeing a child struggle with reading and spelling. We want our children to love to read and to be able to communicate with their writing, but sometimes the struggle is real. That's why I love to recommend podcast sponsor All About Learning Press. Their All About Spelling and All About Reading programs help your student become a proficient reader and speller for life. The Orton-Gillingham approach works wonders for struggling and eager learners alike. Instead of a guess-as-you-go approach, students master one concept at a time, instilling confidence and competence. And the scripted lessons provided in All About Learning Press curriculum mean it's easy for busy homeschool mamas to open and go, so we never miss a step. If you're looking for an effective, fun, and affordable reading or spelling curriculum, check out All About Spelling and All About Reading at allaboutlearningpress.com or just click the link in the show notes. That's allaboutlearningpress.com.
Thank you so much to everyone who submitted a question. I got some of these in social media DMs, some answering a question sticker on Instagram, and some via email. So somehow in my notes, I lost a couple people's names. And so I'm so sorry if your question is the one I missed a name. But I really appreciate each of you who took the time to send a question. So as we've done in the past, Emma, how about if you read the questions?
Okay.
And I don't know if I'll give an answer, but I'll try.
Okay. So this first one is from April, and she asks, what denomination are you?
Very good question. So until I was 10 years old, I was a member of a Baptist church, but I was first introduced to Reformed theology at an Associate Reformed Church, that's the ARP in South Carolina. And I've been a member of the same Orthodox Presbyterian Church, OPC, since I was 16. So I'm currently a member of the OPC, and that's where I met my husband, and that's where all my kids have grown up, too. But I know a lot of people don't really know what the OPC is. It can get a little tricky with the Presbyterian letters and the names, especially if you're outside that realm. You're like, what are all these alphabet letters? I don't understand. The OPC was founded in 1936 as a result of the modernism that had infiltrated the mainline Presbyterian denomination. So that denomination, the PCUSA, had rejected important historic doctrines like the inspiration and authority of Scripture, the virgin birth of Christ, and substitutionary atonement. So J. Gresham Machen was a theologian and professor and pastor at the time. And author, I guess, and others left that denomination to found one that returned to orthodox, like not heretical doctrines.
Thus, we like not being heretics.
Yeah, that's the orthodox in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. So our denomination believes that the Westminster Confession of Faith and the shorter and larger catechisms are good summaries of what the Bible teaches. And I'm really thankful to hear the gospel clearly preached each Sunday morning and evening in my local congregation.
And there are OPC churches all over the United States. that, and whenever we travel, we tend to go to an OPC church, and it's really cool how all the churches, like, they have their own, you know, quirks or whatever, but they're all very distinctly OPC. So that's one thing that I love about the OPC, aside from, like, not being heretics.
Yes, we like to be Orthodox. But yeah, I think that it's really wonderful to be able to talk about our theological distinctives and also to remember how much we share in common right there in the rooted in the gospel across many denominations. And so that is what I am most thankful for at my church.
Well, this next question is from Mary Catherine, and she asks, how did you do hospitality and church/community service when all your kids were little, and do you have any suggestions?
Well, let's kind of take these topics one at a time. So let's start with hospitality. I remember when I was actually in South Carolina at that church I mentioned earlier, one of the pastors, when he was talking about hospitality, said that it's not what's on the table, it's having an open door. And I think that can be really helpful for us to think about when it comes to hospitality, because something that can keep us from showing hospitality is thinking like we have to have something really fancy prepared, or like a really nice dinner, or everything has to be really decorated and, like, you know, Southern Living at Home or Martha Stewart or something like that, or Instagram, I guess, is what the kids call it these days.
Pinterest or something.
Pinterest. So just to remember that the biggest part of hospitality is just opening the door and inviting someone in. And if you can do that, whatever happens inside the door is a lot less important than just the initial opening it up. Another just kind of practical tip, and this is something that started when my kids were little, but honestly, it's still the same today. I pretty much always cook the exact same crockpot meal when we're having people over on a Sunday. Not exclusively, now I have a little bit more space occasionally to branch out, but generally speaking, it is always the same meal. It's also the same meal that I take people when they have a new baby, or
when they're sick.
I mean, it's just my thing.
If you just want to give someone a meal.
You are going to get multi-purpose. Yes. So what is this amazing meal? Oh, it's very simple. And it's Aztec chicken.
It's so good, though. It is so good. It is genuinely my favorite food. I love it so much.
Yeah. See, she hasn't gotten tired of it yet. It's really magical food. But having the one thing, like having that decision already made for me, really is another thing that was helpful. I didn't have to worry about, like, oh, the last time they were here, they had Aztec chicken. Well, I mean, chances are that was a few months ago, the last time they were here. So they don't mind eating it again. No one's ever complained. It's a crock pot meal. So that's another thing that's really helpful for hospitality, especially on Sundays. Like, you don't want to have to come back from church and then cook a meal while all the little kids are super hungry and grumpy. So just to have something that's already ready that you can just open and go when you get home is really helpful. So the basic ingredients for the Aztec chicken are shredded chicken breasts, black beans, salsa, frozen corn, and cream cheese. And you serve this over rice. You can serve it with corn chips. The other thing I really like about it is if you need to be a little bit thriftier, you can have less chicken and more beans. And if you're in a season of plenty, you can have more chicken and less beans. So it's very versatile depending on your budget and how many people you're serving. You know, it just works really, really well. So pick something that you can just always go to, that same meal that you're always going to go to, and not try to be too creative. Again, going back to that whole opening your door and not worrying about the meal principle. Another thing that's helpful with hospitality, especially when you have little kids, is to accept help and let people bring sides. Now that I have older kids, it actually brings me a lot of joy when I have younger families over to be able to say, no, really, you don't have to bring anything. I've got it. Because that's something that I can do to bless them. But not that I don't sometimes still like accept help, but I can do that more often now. But when everyone was little, I would be like, yes, you know, you bring a salad, you bring a side, you bring a dessert, something like that. Accepting help doesn't mean you're not showing hospitality. It can be a way to still be together and be together in our homes while sharing the load.
Yeah.
Wait, there was something I was going to say about that and I've forgotten. Maybe it'll come back to me as I continue talking. The other thing is, you know, paper plates, they don't hurt. Don't be ashamed to use paper plates. If the weather is good and it's safe you know, send whatever children you can outside. It just makes the cleanup mm-hmm. that much simpler. Oh, I remember the thing I was going to say.
Wow.
Okay. So this is a little counterintuitive, and depending on your situation or your personality, maybe this wouldn't be as appealing to you. Mm-hmm. But I found actually having multiple families over at the same time yes. was actually easier because you've already done the work to like maybe try to clean the bathroom a little and like pick stuff up off the floor. Like when you have a right. bunch of little kids, that feels like so much work. Like the hardest mm-hmm. part is even if you're not trying to have the house super clean, like just a little bit picked up feels yeah. like a lot of work. And you've already done all the like chopping and whatever, so you might as well chop a few more things. Mm-hmm. And even when we lived in a home that was very tiny, and once people were at the table, like everyone had to stand up.
There.
Yeah, you were stuck. If you had to go to the bathroom, like everybody had to stand up in yeah. order to let you out. So even when we had smaller space, we would still try to have multiple families over at a time and just sort of like stick kids on tablecloths or whatever. Benches, you know, like lay things out for picnics in the living room or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it felt like an efficient way to do hospitality where you got yeah. to like reach out to several people with less effort at one yeah. time.
And that way you can like, you know, get through the list of people faster and more times. And then you can start back at the beginning all over again.
I know. It's so great. All right. How about serving in the church? Well, some of these things have changed definitely when I think back when kids were little, but some of the ways in which they've changed, actually, in some ways, I did more things when all the kids were little and we weren't homeschooling as intensely as we are now. So I think just remembering, too, it's easy to think when you have all little kids, like, oh, the season will be easier when all the kids are older. And some of it is a lot easier. Obviously, you're not dealing with bodily fluids, for one thing, all the time. That's really...
Everyone can buckle themselves. It's also efficient.
It is. That's a great part of having more kids. But there are other things that are a lot harder and a lot more time consuming. So if you wait until you have, quote unquote, all this extra time or energy to serve, you kind of won't ever do it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like you can't serve in all the ways at all the times. And so knowing it's okay to say no to things. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to share things that I've done, but these aren't prescriptive. These just worked in my season at the time. I will say when I had all nursing babies and toddlers, you know, you mamas who have tiny people, you know that you just miss a lot of church. Like you are in and out with the cranky kid or you're having to nurse the baby. And so you already feel like you're missing so much of the church service, so much of the sermon. There were whole like I don't know, maybe like a decade of my life where I feel like I don't even know if I sat through a whole church service once a month on a regular basis. And so in that season, I just chose for several years not to serve in the nursery. Mm-hmm. And now that I don't have little kids, I love going back and serving in the nursery because most of the time I'm able to sit through the church service and I want the younger moms to be able to do that too. But that was something I said no to when I had all little kids. I did remember, though, back before our church, it's a small church, and we used not to hire a cleaning service to clean the church building, and we had a rotating schedule. So I remember when Emma was a baby, like, she'd be in a stroller or in the car seat, and Joshua was like a toddler with a little dust rag, and I would be –
He was such a big help.
Yeah, such a big help. And I would literally go and, like, clean the whole church, you know, with my little ones. So there were ways to kind of bring the little ones along for the ride. And honestly, I don't think I would be able to do that now with our schedule. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to serve in that way if we still – thankfully,
yeah,
we know.
Yeah, there's not time in the week.
No. So over the years, you know, when I had little ones, there were things I helped with or things I coordinated, but I didn't do them all at one time. So – just remembering that you don't have to say yes to everything, but it's okay to say yes to one thing. Also, I just really suggest listening to your husband or a trusted friend. Even now, every time we get a church email that's like, we need someone to teach this Sunday school, I get like all worked up and I'm like, oh no, John, I should volunteer. They need someone and I should teach Sunday school.
I'm the only one that can do it.
And John's always like, no. And that's just really helpful to remember that we aren't the Holy Spirit and God can do the work of the church without us. We don't have to be the one to say yes or to help. And at the same time, like I said at the beginning, when even when we're in the thick of the little years, I think there can be ways to serve You can pray, you can write an encouraging note or call someone, have somebody over for PB&J sandwiches. Our family could never do PB&J because we have a peanut allergy, but we could do almond butter and jelly. I don't know. ABJ? Is that a thing?
Now it is.
Sure. So just find something simple. Again, going back to the hospitality, like there are ways that's serving the church to encourage and show fellowship to others.
And hospitality is part of serving the church, like we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Now, the third part of this question was community service. And basically, I just don't do community service right now. I've prioritized our family and our church. So, I mean, I do help at our homeschool support group. I try to return library books. That's a service to the community.
Big service. All those other homeschool moms who are like, I need the Christmas picture books. They're so grateful.
That's right. I try to bring them back on time. We bring snacks to sporting events. I don't know.
Get great snacks.
I was really racking my brain, like, do I serve the community? But that's something that I think I will be able to do more when my kids are grown. And that is something I did not do when they were little, nor I middle, whatever they are now. Yeah. I ended up having a lot more thoughts than I thought.
Well, there you go. That was great.
Okay.
Okay. So our next question is from Lauren, and she says, we usually try to do most of our schoolwork in the beginning of the day, and then after lunch have a quiet time. The youngest still naps, and the older ones are supposed to be quietly reading or working on whatever projects they want without bothering me. This usually doesn't go as planned.
Yeah.
Relatable.
Totally.
My question is, well, Lauren's question, do you have a daily quiet time? If so, what does it look like? I try to sit down with a warm drink to rest and read a book for a bit. Once I'm through with that, I'll check my email, then try to get motivated to get back up and going. But it's so hard to have renewed energy for the other tasks in the day. I could just sit for the rest of the day, it seems. What are your thoughts on how to get back to working after a long morning than a restful break?
Yeah, I don't know that I have very wise advice here, because a lot of times by the middle of the afternoon or right after lunchtime, I'm not feeling filled with energy and vivacity myself. But to answer your question, now I really don't have quiet time in the afternoon. When the kids were younger, I would just like crash. We would get through lunch and I would send everyone to like read their book or play quietly or take their naps. And then I just would like, I don't know, stare into space for a little bit. I can barely remember some of those days. They were blurs. And I'm not sure that I was very productive at all, really, after 1 p.m. But now our afternoons are really full. I'm driving people places. I'm working on this podcast or my blog or virtual assistant work. And so I just don't really have that sort of quiet downtime that I used to really require and look forward to when my kids were younger. But that being said, I have realized that my energy tends to peak first thing in the morning. Like I'm my best self when I first get up. Well, after I drink my coffee. And then through the day it fades. So anything important that doesn't get done by lunch probably isn't going to get done. In the same way, Mondays are more energetic for me and I tend to drag by Friday. So instead of trying to work against that, I just work with the flow of my own energy and I try to plan and prioritize the things that are hardest or most important in the earlier parts of the day or the earlier parts of the week. So just though, it, like kind of practical tips, if you're tired and you still have to get up, like, you know, somebody has to make the dinner or, you know, whatever it is, and you just are feeling it difficult to kind of get back into the swing of things in the afternoon, simple moving our bodies can be sometimes just as good as a nap when you've got hit that sort of mid-afternoon slump. And I find now I can't really have caffeine in that mid-afternoon slump because it will keep me awake all night, but I can move my body and it kind of gives me that boost of energy. There's nothing more delightful than a really rockin' motivational song.
Although I do recommend changing it rather frequently so that you still enjoy the song and don't hate it because it's your alarm and you're waking up to it and you're like, man, it's taking me away from sleep.
Yes, that is very wise advice. Listen to my daughter. If you can have something to look forward to, like if you've taken the time to read and check your email and like drink your warm beverage and then you're like, okay, I'm going to now go do this task, but then I have this other thing to look forward to. It helps me to look. I have to like bribe myself sometimes.
And short timers to like compete against can often help if you're like really not wanting to do stuff. You're like, I can do it for 20 minutes.
Yes.
And then either you're like on a roll and don't want to stop, or you're like, okay, I finished. I can take another break.
Yes, exactly. And if there's something that you're like always seems to be stymied, like you're hitting a wall at the same time or with the same thing every afternoon, I wonder if there's a way you could bring it more to the time where you find your energy to be higher. If you're a morning person, maybe you could do it before breakfast or before school or after dinner if you're a night owl. But I mean, at the end of the day, especially if you have young children or even if you don't have young children, like just being a homeschool mom is a lot of work. And we are just pouring out like emotional, spiritual, physical, and make sure your expectations for yourself are reasonable. Because if you're really tired and you can't get up and keep working, there's nothing wrong with just resting.
Yeah, that feeds so nicely into our next question from Melissa. It says, we all know that nobody does it all. What are your personal favorite ways to cut corners? Or what do you let go of in exchange for focusing on what really matters most to you?
So I am not the best at keeping our house super clean. So I think it's decent. Like, it's not filthy with vermin or anything, but it is very dusty. It is very dusty. You could pretty much probably find, I don't know, piles of dust in any corner of the house. We don't do a lot of crafts or hands-on projects. Our meals are very simple. We eat a lot of the same things. And I don't experiment in the kitchen as much as I used to.
I mean, I will say the food is very good, though. Oh, it's very delicious.
You're very sweet.
I could eat it all the time.
And you do. I don't have to experiment in the kitchen now because, like, Emma's always experimenting in the kitchen. So that's kind of fun, too. I have learned, especially over the past few years, I really do not do well without sleep. So a lot of times I'll just choose to go to bed with things undone, rather than staying up to fold the laundry or catch up on my to-do list or whatever is still left. I just need that sleep. And so I think sleep is more important than checking things off on my list. And sometimes I'll choose to read a book instead of doing things on my list because my mind needs that intellectual rest as well. Because to-dos never end. There's always more work that needs to be done. And so sometimes I just stop and don't do any more. Now, I can be lazy, of course. Sometimes that could be a lazy choice, but for the most of the time, I'm okay with it. I also don't can. I don't garden. I don't make my own bread. I also don't really make my own bed. I don't sew. I used to crochet, but I haven't done that in years. I think the last thing I crocheted was Isaac's baby blanket.
Yeah, we don't have pets.
Oh, we don't have pets. Or a farm. What are other things we don't do?
We have a very small yard that we don't really have to mow.
Oh, yeah. We changed, like, the grass.
We have this magic grass. It doesn't grow.
It's magic.
But it's, like, not fake grass. It's great.
That's technically not something I don't do, but that's something Dad doesn't do. Yeah, we don't have to.
Which saves a lot of time for him.
It does. We don't have to mow the grass anymore. Oh, we can have bonding time. It's so sweet. Okay. Yeah, but, you know, everybody has their own thing that's important to them. So if, like, gardening is really important to you, I'm not saying that's –
just those are not bad things.
No, it's just things that I have chosen to say no to so that we have time for other things. And it's good to remember that, especially with internet people. Like, you just see, oh, look, this person's really good at that, or this person, you know, bakes their own bread, and not one person is doing all the things.
Yeah. And it can be fun to do those things once in a while, but you can do it once in a while without having to do it all the time.
Oh, that's very good advice.
I'm very wise.
Yes.
You should listen to me. Okay, so this one does not have an asker. Well, I assume that it does.
It did, but I lost the name. I'm so sorry.
We love you. Please keep listening. So, knee deep in middle school and coming up short with age-appropriate resources. Ideas?
Okay.
Great phrasing. I love it.
So, middle school is really hard. It can be such a time of transition. In pretty much every way, academically, physically, emotionally.
It's rough.
It's I'm really glad I'm not in middle school anymore. So you can have a child whose emotional maturity is like really zooming ahead, but they are just not ready for a more advanced academic load, or vice versa. You can have a kid who's like ready for high school super early, but their emotions are far behind and their social maturity. So I just think middle school in general is a weird homeschool season. And even academically, like if you look at textbooks for like science or math, a lot of times they're not really teaching anything new. They're kind of reviewing old material you've already learned before, just with like a little bit more information, or yeah. they're kind of like prepping you for high school. But I don't know. It's just very awkward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then basically I'm just not very fun.
You're very fun, Mom. We love you.
In my own way. But not – I'm not the person I would recommend going to for, like, super creative, fun ideas.
We do a lot of Shakespeare, though, and that's really fun.
That is fun. But if your middle schooler does not think that's fun, I am going to point you to three resources, and I will put these links in the show notes. One, check out the book clubs from my friend Mary Wilson. She did so many amazing book clubs with her teens when they were in middle school, and she has a lot of those resources available on her website, and she also now teaches some online book clubs. Really fun. And I'm going to put in a link to the Weird Unsocialized Homeschoolers. They have a 100 hands-on activities for middle school and high school post, and rockyourhomeschool.net with some homeschool fun ideas for middle school. So those are for, like, actual fun. My version of fun is like, hey, maybe there's a job or volunteer opportunity that you can do outside home.
Keeping you busy.
Yeah. I mean, my middle schoolers have all done that in different ways. Look for more responsibilities and more privileges around the home. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's fun.
Yeah. And also with, like, jobs and responsibilities, it can be really fun to do them, like, not in your own house, like, with other people, like, me and my sister now have both, like, been a mother's helper for a mom in the area. And that is really fun because then it makes you feel like a grown-up because you're, like, doing a job, but it's actually not, like, a real job. And you get, you know, it's fun and you feel, like, very, very fabulous, but without it being, you know, it's at an appropriate level for an emotional middle schooler.
Yeah, it's still safe and age appropriate. So I think sometimes it's good to remember that actually is fun. Maybe not fun in like a fun and games kind of way, but I think it's fun for a middle schooler to feel like they're growing up and are being treated like they're growing up. So yeah, that's what I have to say about fun.
And it can also be good for your emotional state to not be around your family all the time. I love my family, but it's also good to like have to be like have someone else that you are responsible to.
And sometimes it's good for your family not to be around a middle schooler.
Yeah. All right. Also field trips, because everyone loves field trips, no matter how old you are, from a 2-year-old to a 99-year-old.
Yes, and we actually do a lot of field trips, so I guess that's a way I'm a fun mom.
Yeah, you are. See?
I'm such a fun mom.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, this next question, again, we don't know who it's from. It's a mystery. But again, listener, we love you too. So I'm not leaving you out. Don't worry. So this person asks, what is a homeschool mom stereotype that is not true about you?
I don't know. I might get kicked off the internet for this. I don't own a laminator.
No.
I've never owned a laminator.
Not the laminator.
I also don't really like playing games. We've already established I'm not super fun.
Well, now I'm curious. This was not a listener question, but now I'm curious. What are stereotypes that are true?
I really do like books. I mean, that's a stereotype. I get very excited about researching homeschool curriculum and making planning.
There you go.
And I can pretty much find a way to make anything educational.
Anything is education if you try hard enough. Well, okay. This does have a name attached with it. So Catherine asks, what do you do when your 10-year-old boy hates school? Well, can I just say, literally every single solitary person who has ever been 10 hates school. Because you're not in the
like – some of the time.
Well, at least some of the time, yes. So like when you're little, you love school because it's not really school yet. And then when you're older, even if you don't like love school, you at least like appreciate it for – you know, education, and that's good or whatever. And then, you know, you kind of like are like, wow, this actually does kind of matter a little bit. I should take this a little more seriously. But then when you're 10, it's like not fun because it's actual school. I mean, not that
it's really hard.
Education is fun, but it's hard, and doing hard things is not fun a lot of the time. And you haven't yet grown to appreciate that, like, it actually does kind of matter. So, you know, it's okay. This happens to everyone, especially in January and February, which is why you should check out the winter something or other. What's it called?
The Winter Wonder Homeschooling
Winter
Challenge.
Winter Wonder Homeschooling Challenge.
What if I told you that there was a way to incorporate freedom into your homeschool planning? A way to blend flexibility and a well-ordered day. Homeschool planning doesn't have to be scary. I have created a free homeschool planning guide to help you ask the right big picture questions to set your long-term homeschool goals, and it will also give you 7 simple steps to craft a peaceful, orderly homeschool plan. If you want access to this free ebook, just head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-planning-guide or just click the link in the show notes.
You guys,
I break in. Tragedy struck.
Tragedy struck. We continue to record. We said so many amazing, profound things.
It was so deep. You guys missed out.
And then we came to stop the recording and it had just stopped itself.
It vanished.
And I don't even know if I can, my heart can take re-recording, but we're going to go back and we're going to bring the enthusiasm.
Yes.
We're going to bring all the energy. I'm going to try to remember all the profound things we said.
Yes. We'll do our best, guys.
Okay. So as Emma was saying, you can sign up for the Winter Wonder Homeschooling Challenge. But I think the last thing she was talking about was what to do if your 10-year-old hates school. And Emma's perspective was, you know, you're not a failure. This is normal. And it is not a disaster. So we haven't failed as homeschool moms. If we have a kid who hates a subject that we really wanted them to love, or a kid who doesn't like to read books with their eyes, I've had kids with both of those issues, kids who have said, I don't like school. Now, I think sometimes homeschooling, we assume that it will just magically make everything go away and we'll have children who just love to learn all the time and will never complain. That's just not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Homeschooling is not magic. And, you know, it's normal for a 10-year-old boy to not want to sit at a table and do worksheets too. So I do think, though, it's really helpful, depending on the kid, to ask good questions and try to listen to the answers to really understand their perspectives. Because I hate school, that can mean a lot of things. Like, what's really going on there? Is it too hard? Or maybe it's too easy and so it's boring. Is it taking too long? Are they worried they're going to fail? There are lots of reasons that can come out as, I hate school, but the solution may be different depending on really what's going on in their heart. If it's an attitude issue, the best answer may just be to persevere and pray. And Cindy Rollins talks about being impervious. So, you know, as they like throw attitude and complaining or whatever up against you, just to be that sort of impervious wall so that it doesn't affect your own heart, which is easier said than done, but goes back to prayer, of course. If it's an attention issue, maybe finding ways where they can move their body, combine their own interests with what they're learning. Like one time Joshua used Minecraft to make a model of a historic battle. Make sure they have things to look forward to that are exciting for them so that they don't feel like everything they're doing is just a slog. And keep those lessons short, because even at 10-year-olds are still really young. And I do remember I said this in the last time, so I want to make sure I say this again. Like, having my fourth child now is 10, and I just realize better now how young 10 is compared to when my first or my second were 10 years old. And so if it's your oldest child or your second child who's 10, it can still feel like they just seem so grown, like they should be really stepping into all this maturity, and they are. They're maturing. But don't forget they're still young. So make
sure. They're still in the doorway of maturity.
Oh, the doorway of maturity. That's great. Yeah. And so make sure expectations are appropriate and reasonable as well. Because sometimes we can be causing the frustration. And maybe just a couple little tweaks might end up having a bigger help than you think.
Okay. Next question is from Laura. And she asks, what age do you start Latin?
So it's been a little different for different children. My oldest was super excited about learning everything. I was read, like, loved workbooks and just doing academic stuff. And I was super excited too. And I loved Latin. And so we actually started Latin when he was in kindergarten.
And I sort of tagged along.
Yes. So it worked really great for him. He went on to complete all the way up through 3 years of high school Latin and did really well. It didn't work out so well for Emma. If I had to do it again, I would not have had her tag along. I would have waited until she was a little older to start because she kind of ended up hating Latin. And it was kind of my fault.
But I still like the songs. Yes. So that's okay.
Yes. We had really fun songs to sing with the Song School Latin. With my youngest son, he is in second grade now, and we have not started Latin, but I do plan on starting gently with him next year in third grade with the Song School Latin. We've really loved all of the Latin program from Classical Academic Press. So there's Song School Latin. If you have a younger learner who you are really excited or they're really excited to start Latin, then Latin for Children is great for elementary and middle school. And Latin Alive is great for junior high and high school. So just really highly recommend that curriculum. But I would just be careful why you want to start early. If you had to make a choice, like err on one side or the other, I would err on waiting. But then again, like I have had that kid who really was ready to start early. And so if your kid really is, you know your child and you don't have to listen to me. You can be your own homeschool mom and decide what's best for you and your own kid. I would recommend listening to a conversation that I had with Angela Reed. It's an earlier episode of this podcast, and she teaches Latin from a Charlotte Mason perspective. She really recommends against starting Latin early and had a sort of unique and different perspective on Latin in your homeschool. So definitely check that out, and I'll put that link in the show notes.
Okay, so Amy, who has the same name but spelled differently from you, she asks, how are you finding parenting through the college application process? What are you learning?
So when I first showed Emma the outline for this episode, did it do it again? Maybe not. I'm gonna have to go back and edit this whole thing. Oh my goodness. When I first showed Emma the outline for this episode and the questions, like she kind of, I guess, laughed a little bit about this one because, the short answer is it is very hard. The parenting part is very hard. I don't think that's because homeschooling has made it hard. I think it's just because we're sinners and my kids are sinners and, yeah, get a bunch of sinners doing stressful things together and it's really hard. I have mentioned here, I think on the podcast, I know in my email and social media that I am choosing to not share a lot of details right now about our college application and college decision process just because it's kind of private and there's a lot of details that aren't really mine to share right now. And so maybe at some point when I've figured it out.
When Isaac graduates in 10 years, yes. She will give you the rundown.
Yes. Hopefully before 10 years have passed, but Not this podcast season. I will say that just what have I learned? I've learned how much pride and idolatry I still have. I keep thinking I've overcome these sins or I'm so much sanctified. And then opportunities arise for the Lord to show me how much I still need to repent and how much I still need to grow and change.
So you're saying that homeschooling neither made your children the ideal human nor yourself the ideal human? It didn't work?
It is true. Homeschooling did not save me or my children.
No.
Another thing I would just say is it's sort of like the analogy is like if you're dating someone and there's something really annoying about them, but you kind of are like not too annoyed about it and you're like, oh, they'll grow out of it or they'll stop doing it. And then like they don't. And 5 years later, it's like really super annoying. I would just say the same thing is like the struggles or the challenges or the positives that you have in your relationship with your child in second grade or 10th grade or whatever don't just magically go away or not affect the experience of them as a senior and making big decisions. And so I think that it's good just to remember to be patient and to pray a lot.
Prayer is really good.
Yeah, I've been praying a lot this year. It's hard. But as far as the actual application process or the transcript part, that's actually really not the hard part. It's just the people part that's hard. The application process, I would point you to fearlesshomeschoolers.com. She has amazing free resources for like how to fill out the Common App as a homeschooler and how to write the counselor letter stuff that's sort of like, how do you do this as a homeschooler? She just makes it really easy and step-by-step guide there. And then when it comes to the transcript or homeschooling high school, I recommend checking out my previous conversation with Anne Carrico over on YouTube, and I will put that link in the show notes. So I didn't have a whole lot to say about that right now. Well, I mean, I have a whole lot to say, but I'm not going to say it publicly.
She will say it in 10 years.
Stay tuned. Maybe in a couple years. Well, I just really appreciate everyone taking the time to share your earbuds with us. Thank you for being a part of the Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology community. Please do take the time to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It tells the magical algorithm of the internet to share this podcast with other people, and tell a friend if you would. I would really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's kind of the coolest podcast in the whole entire world. So you really should.
Okay, yes. And if you want more of Emma, of course, check out the Kids Talk Church History podcast, where she and other teens get to explore ideas about church history, which
it's
is
a little
really
more
fun.
Serious, though.
It's a lot more serious, yeah.
Although, we do interview really cool people, though. Yes. So,
but if you want something more off the cuff, you have to tune in to the next listener Q&A episode.
Right. You just have to listen to every single episode all the way through. With, like, you know, rating all, I don't know how the podcasting works, but on YouTube, you like it. And you do that for every single one. And then maybe you'll get to hear me again.
Okay.
You have to hold up your side of the bargain, though.
Okay.
Come on, guys.
Bring him back to the podcast. And please do also sign up for the free Winter Wonder Homeschooling Challenge. I will have that link in the show notes. You will get access to over $200 worth of amazing homeschool resources for free and bring a little joy and cheer to your homeschool.
It won't save you, but no. It will probably make it way more fun.
You heard it here first. All right. Until next time, friends, keep homeschooling.
Bye.
Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.